Hello and welcome to a new season of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course, on our podcast. I'm Eddie Packham and we are broadcasting to the world in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, it would be fair to say that it's been a pretty crazy summer. We all knew that following our record-breaking season last time out, that there would be interest in some of our prized assets. And so it proved, with Alexis McAllister's move to Liverpool being concluded quickly and cleanly, although probably not for the kind of money that most of us had in mind for our World Cup winner. But the subplot for the whole summer has been Chelsea's half-hearted pursuit of Moises Caicedo. And with the kickoff now upon us, they still just won't go away. It's very much a case of put up or shut up. Others have, though, gone for passage news, and that includes Robert Sanchez, who has gone to Chelsea, and perhaps surprisingly, Dennis Undav, who has left to go on loan to Stuttgart. We also say goodbye to Aaron Connolly, who's signed permanently for Hull. But it's not all been about the exit doors. We've seen us smash our transfer record to bring in João Pedro from Watford. Mahmoud Dahoud has joined us from Borussia Dortmund. Keeper Vaart Verbruggen has come in from Anderlecht. Old-timer James Milner arrived from Liverpool. And Igor Julio has signed on the dotted line from Fiorentina. Rumours of us breaking our record again are rife. And also this season, our Seagulls spread our wings and they headed off to America for the Premier League Summer Series. Some of you will have seen the joyous scenes of our growing global fan base being able to see and in some case meet the team. We've come a very, very long way. Anyway, as is tradition on the first show of the season, I'm joined by the band. So, on triangle, it's Alan Wares. On Tibetan nose flute, it's Marcus Hancocks. And on bass, it's Andy Bass. Happy new season, boys. Have you all got your half-baked predictions ready?
Nope. Yes, yeah. Maybe. What are you playing, by the way?
I am on Indian Bells this week, I think. Or something.
We're putting an end to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. So anyway,
actually, can I just say quickly, you say about how, you know, it's the new season. Can I just say that I've never, ever, ever looked forward to a new season immediately after the old one as I have this year. Never had it. You know, sometimes you think, well, thank goodness that season's over. We've got our break. Could do with it. There's not even a sort of, there's the Women's World Cup, but there's not a huge amount gone on during the summer. And yet, since the last day of the season, I could not have waited for this season to have come, you know, more excitedly.
Really, because the whole summer's just been overshadowed by one big story that hasn't happened yet.
I've let it pass me by. I really have.
Well, you have been out of the country for quite a bit. I mean,
for 9 days.
It's been very hard to ignore.
Well, no, and nothing's
happened.
There's
just been lots and lots of noise.
Well, yeah, let them make the noise, because in the great scheme of things, I mean, this is paying tribute to Tony Bloom. And let's face it, we had exactly this discussion at the beginning of the year. And I'm loath to repeat it, apart from the fact that that's what it is. It's, for me, Andy, it's a bit of noise, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot of noise. It's very irritating, though. I wish I could have taken your advice and let it and just ignore it. Although, to be honest, I'm at the point where I will probably do that now. But like you say, you know, Tony Bloom holds all the cards. It gets done or it doesn't get done when Tony says so. So everything else is just noise. And, you know, we're just checking the Twitter feed every 5 seconds, every halfway rumor and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, I've been guilty of following that myself and changing my mind on which direction it's going to go all the time. But basically, you know, we know nothing. We know nothing. Yeah. We're not party to any of the conversations. We haven't heard directly from any of the major participants. So far Chelsea haven't offered us enough money for Moises, so he's still our player. And yeah, as far as I can see, that is the way it's going to remain until we get offered a sum that we go, yeah, okay, we'll take it.
Marcus, I mean, do you think that
the constant background noise has overshadowed the preparations a little bit. I mean, we don't see what's going on the training ground, obviously, but it's just been ongoing, and like, you know, you can't ignore it.
Well, we can't, because as you say, there's so much noise about it. It's everywhere on social media and in the newspapers and everything. I mean, Brighton haven't actually quoted how much he's for sale for. The price just keeps going up and up. But, you know, you would guess it's 100 million plus. But is it upsetting the preparation? I don't know. They're professional footballers. This thing happens all the time. It happens all the time. Every football club, right the way through the divisions, obviously, you know, depending on the sums insured. But, you know, in a League Two club, it would be a few hundred thousand, you know, in a Premier League, it's, you know, a few hundred million. I'm sure the players themselves are just taking it all in their stride as they do, because this is, you know, this is the occupational hazard of being a professional footballer, basically. What I am confident in that Moyes is, you know, yes, okay, he had to sort of have a little bit of time out in January when Arsenal was sniffing about, but, you know, he came back, signed a new contract, and put in some really, really excellent performances when he came back. He didn't down tools like Trossard did when he came off the bench for, you know, against that cup game against Charlton. So, you know, and I would expect him to do the same if he doesn't get his move, because let's face it, he's probably going to go at the end of next season anyway, after we've won the Europa League. So there you go.
Well, in answer to that same question, I mean, I think that, and I'm sure we'll cover this a lot more in later in the show, has it affected everyone else? Well, you just look at the performances that they put in, and these were just pre-season friendlies. I mean, all right, they might have been for a tournament. They're there to put on a show for a new audience. But if you saw those performances, you realise that the levels haven't dropped. They were playing in heat, and everyone just got on with their game. Yes, you know that he's a superior player, and you miss him when he's not there. But in the great scheme of things, there's enough there to cover him if absolutely necessary. Ideally, you want several midfielders worth of talent in one person, which is great. But in terms of the preparation, I didn't see a disunited team. I didn't see disharmony. I saw a team that's working well together. I saw a team that De Zerbi's got well drilled. Even the new kids coming in who've made a splash. And again, we'll talk about that shortly. In the great scheme of things, if it has, you know, overshadowed the rest of the club, it really doesn't show.
It's just a case of just, I mean, I just want it, even if it's going to happen, do it now. Just stop dragging this out.
This is down to Chelsea, isn't it? Down to Chelsea to do this.
Yeah, I mentioned at the top of the show there that, you know, the Alexis transfer, it happened quickly and it happened cleanly. It was done. This is how much money we're prepared to offer. It was acceptable to us. It was done. He's gone.
Right.
Still feel a bit sick when I see him in a Liverpool shirt, to be honest. But that's the natural order, I suppose, Mandy.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing about Alexis is that it was all done so well. I mean, you know, sadly, you know, we are above the parapet now. People are going to pick off our best players. He'd just been brilliant at the World Cup. So I think an excellent signing for Liverpool. Is that his contract was running down, so the chance of us getting a huge fee was fairly limited. And, you know, you can't blame him for wanting to go to, like, you know, one of the biggest clubs in the world by reputation and European trophy count. So it's a good got to him, and he handled it completely well. Again, another player that, even when he knew he was on his way out, continued to deliver game in, game out. He left with good grace, and he left with all our good wishes. And I'm delighted to see that the Liverpool fans are happy with him. And they've been very nice to us about it, saying, "Oh, thanks for letting us have him for like such a little bit of money." But, you know,
it does seem a low figure, though, doesn't it? I don't know what the add-ons are, but it just seems.
I think with the add-ons, it becomes a reasonable figure. Yeah, I think the figure we got paid up front did seem a little bit smaller, but it is what it is. A player in his last year of his contract, it's clearly not going to re-sign, and we lanced that boil. It's a different situation with Moyes because he's on a 4-year contract. He's our player. He's allegedly committed to it. He's committed to us on paper, so we're in a position to ask for a lot more money.
Okay, Alan.
I'm just wondering, actually, if there's one rule for Chelsea and one rule for everyone else. Because let's face it, I say, Bissouma went through fairly smoothly. Even Trossard went through relatively smoothly, as did McAllister. Now, I think with the McAllister, what you've got there is that you've got someone who the club have a almost like a vested interest, like a kind of a kindly uncle, who will actually look and see which club they see as being the appropriate one for which a given player could go to. I think that if possibly any other club had come in for McAllister, apart from maybe Man City, that's not to say they'd have mucked about, the club would have mucked about, but they can see that this is actually really good for Alexis's career progression and therefore wouldn't stand in his way and therefore they're not going to muck about.
Yeah.
But Chelsea, they're there for having their pants pulled down. And I think that possibly...
Andy, you're shaking your head at that.
Yeah, I don't really agree. It's simply that we value Moyes much more highly. Like Paul Barber and Tony Bloom have got quite a good relationship with, you know, the Todd Bowley and his team at Chelsea. There's really not any animus, at least none that has been disclosed by Brighton. I was at a supporters club meeting with Paul, and he was quite pleasant about the people at Chelsea. He says we have no problem dealing with them. We get on very well. We've done business.
That's most of them used to be here, Andy.
Yeah, and
Paul and Stanley.
I mean, I just think that the difference with these transfers is just that, you know, Moyes, yeah, it's just that Chelsea want to buy the most valuable of those players. I mean, you know, they've picked the one that is worth the most, and we're not going to budge. I mean, you know, we run Brighton of Hove Albion for our benefit, and it's in our benefit to get this return.
Yeah,
absolutely.
On our investment.
Well, let's just quickly rattle through the others that have actually gone already. Aaron Connolly, I can't say it wasn't exactly a surprise, was it? He needed that new start, and this time he's actually gone and joined Liam permanently at Hull.
Well, I think that's a good move for him, actually. I mean, irrespective of how well he's gone on in the loan, and let's face it, you can't really judge a player always by a half season loan. But you know, if anyone's going to actually sort of like get his head out of his backside, Liam will do it for him.
Yeah, but I mean, I would like to point everyone in the direction, if you haven't seen it, of an absolutely glorious tackle on him by Shane Duffy at the end of their defeat to Norwich at the weekend, where it absolutely completely got taken out. It was, it'd be fair to say Shane was a touch late.
Oh, right. Are we talking as in after the final whistle, even though it was the 38th minute?
Something like that. Right. But we've also seen Robert Sanchez go. I mean, Marcus, it's a shame to see the way it ended. But after he's throwing the toys out the pram at the end of last season, it's not really a surprise, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, obviously, Ben Roberts saw something in him. You know, they wanted a backup to, I believe, is it the world's most expensive goalkeeper, is it?
Yeah.
He's happy to sit on the bench, even though he wasn't happy to sit on the bench at Brighton. But, you know, he's probably trebled his wages. You know, he'll probably get 5 or 6 games for Chelsea, maybe pick up a winner's medal just because. You know, it's sad to see him go, though. I did like Robert. You know, if, as Roberto De Zerbi says, if they don't want to stay, then, you know, off you pop. And that's, you know, exactly what happened. And, you know, and we've got a good fee for him as well. You know, 25 million, that's not to be sniffed at, you know, for an established Premier League goalkeeper. Yeah.
I think someone calculated that actually in the last 13 months or so, we've emptied Todd Bowley's pockets to the tune of 112 million quid. Bearing in mind, that's actually 20 million quid more than the stadium cost. Gives you some perspective, doesn't it?
It does,
yeah, a little bit. But Marcus and Andy, the other one, I'm still finding this a bit of a surprise. I can't sound too happy about it. I think there are mitigating circumstances, but the fact that Dennis Undav has gone off on loan to Stuttgart after biding his time, and he finally got his opportunity towards the end of last season, and I was expecting so much more from him this year, because, you know, he got that monkey off his back and scoring those goals, and, you know, he loves a chip, doesn't he? But the fact that he's gone, I just thought that we were going to see a lot more of him this season.
Yeah, I I was sad that he went. I understand it. I think he was going to be like fourth in line, and also I think Roberto season Julio as a forward player primarily as well. So I just think he wanted to play more. I mean, I think he could have made a valuable contribution to us next season, given the amount of games we're going to be playing. It just didn't appear to be enough games to satisfy Dennis, who wanted to play more, which is, I mean, sadly, he's going to be out for a few weeks now because he's just pranged himself, picked up an injury this week, which is really sad news for him. But yeah, he's out. I think he's out for like 7 weeks or something.
Ouch.
But Marcus, we haven't really got another player like that in the squad, have we?
No, we haven't, and I think he was also homesick as well. And he is the sort of, I don't know, fox in a box. I mean, that goal against Villa was a well-taken goal. I mean, for all the chips and everything else as well, that was a proper sort of goal poacher sniffer's
Yeah,
goal. But
and his link up with Pedro for his goal against Chelsea was, well, just delightful.
exactly. And so he'd obviously started to slot into the team because after he came off the bench in a cup semi-final, he's like, oh no, fluffed a decent chance, but he'd only just come on. Sad to see him go. But as Andy said, he's probably going to be fourth choice. But then with the amount of games that we've got, if we do have a deep run into Europe and a deep run into one or two cups, we are going to maybe still be spread rather thinly.
Okay.
Certainly in defence, I think that's an area with Tarik made of glass and Webster made of glass.
Well, we'll come to that bit in a bit.
Don't
But okay,
forget,
I mean, just
hang
go on, Al,
don't
quickly.
forget that when Undav started with us, when he came in from on loan at sorry, he didn't come on loan. He came straight from Union. Actually, no, he was back. It was on loan for
We
us.
loaned him back to Union,
That's
yeah.
it. Yeah. Okay, but my point is that he came in with the idea of being one of the first choice strikers. And since then, in that 12 intervening 12 months, we've had the purchase of João Pedro. We've had the emergence of Evan Ferguson, because let's face it, at the time he was still one of the kids. We've had the emergence of Enciso, who, although more of a wide player, can play up top. And I get the point that if RDZ isn't prepared to make him the first choice striker and he wants game time, one can understand the frustration. And let's face it, it's a season-long loan. We'll get him back. Who knows what happens after that? But yes, he was just finding his mojo. He was finding the back of the net. He did know where the onion bag was, pretty much
Yeah.
showing the form that he had when he was at USG. And it's probably it's Stuttgart's gain. Let's put it this
Yeah.
way.
I mean, he was becoming a cult hero as well, wasn't he?
It was, well, and this is the point. In the cup semi-final, I said this on the show before. At the cup semi-final, he was getting pelters from people. He was the Ashley Barnes. He was the bad boy. The not the bad boy. The scapegoat,
The Bete
because
Noir.
every side must have one. And I never got it. Yeah, there was. I mean, the game against Bournemouth at home, hit the post, hit the post. Oh no, two keeper saves and then hit the post. When frankly, you should have scored three goals in about 8 seconds. Not it doesn't make him look good. But then, and he looked to be a straight replacement for Morpé. But I at the end of last season, I actually thought he was a more clinical finisher than Morpé. Unpopular opinion, I'm sure, but he certainly had it within him. And if
That isn't controversial by a long stretch. He is a lot more clinical than
there are plenty of people
Morpé.
who.
Morpé took one in six clear-cut opportunities. Dennis was one in two.
Yeah, and most of them were aerial. So yeah, I mean, fair, fine. Good luck to him this season. And like I say, you never know what's happening, especially as it's a loan. So
Okay.
see what gives.
Okay, well, let's have a look at the players that have come in then, and one of which, Andy, we broke our transfer record for, of 30 million of your English pounds
Pennies.
for João Pedro.
Looks an absolute steal already. Just looks electrifying. Just his movement is amazing. He just glides out around the pitch. Absolutely, he's the one player I just cannot wait to see in action every game now. Already he's like that for me. He's just just he's just like fizzed up that sort of final third of the pitch so much, and I think he'll really help our other players up there. So I think like Mitoma, Solly, you know, and the other forwards, they're all going to benefit from him just sort of bedazzling defenders who, you know, they're going to have to make decisions. Do they go with him? Can they stay with him? It's going to create room for other people. Just looks great. It might be a while before we see large amounts of production from him, but I'm sure that is going to come, you know, in fairly quick time. He looks amazing.
Now, Marcus, your pre-season prediction wild card last year was that we're going to score every penalty we get given, which were taken by Alexis last season, and it looks very much like Pedro's going to be on the spot this year.
Yeah, I noticed that he seems to be the designated penalty taker, which is good. You know, so far, so good. And then I guess we've got Gross as a backup or any of the others. I'm still looking forward to Lewis Dunk taking a penalty at some point.
About time, isn't it?
Excluding penalty shootouts, you know, when you get to last knock-ins, because, you know, he can bloody well take one. I'm surprised. Isn't it one season Steve Bruce was like the top scorer for Man United because he took like...
Well, Kerry Mayo once finished top scorer, so, you know.
It's good to have a designated penalty taker at the moment because, you know, there were times before Alexis started taking, I was like, well, who's going to take this? Because Melpe keeps missing, Gross was missed a few, you know, etc. Danny Welbeck wasn't really covering himself in glory either. And it's like,
Danny's only ever taken one for us, though, and he scored it.
Really?
He didn't. West Brom, when we had two penalties awarded.
No, you're right. Yeah, I was thinking about the one he scored in the cup at Arsenal, but I've forgotten about that West Brom. Probably, I can't think why I've forgotten about that one. In the presser after the game on Sunday, he was saying that he's already got a relationship with Danny Welbeck. We played with him at Watford, of course. He played with Purvis at Watford as well. So, you know, he's got a relationship with a couple of our players. And it was actually Purvis that he called to get the lowdown on Brighton before he signed.
So he's going to suffer dog's abuse on Saturday then, isn't he?
Oh, good.
From the away fans. Now, the great thing I've seen about João Pedro, obviously it's all on the telly, I haven't seen him live yet, he's a head down fella. I think, you know, he's clearly still learning De Zerbi's way. You know, because with De Zerbi, he has his tactics, but basically the decisions are left to those out on the pitch. And there's still a certain work in progress that, you know, sometimes he'll want to go past five players when the pass is on, that kind of thing. And there's one thing I did notice again during the summer series, and again, it'll get ironed out, I'm sure. Well, one of the things that Steele likes to do from a goal kick is, you know, you've got all this from a goal kick, they're playing it around. And then there's that sort of floor pass to a forward because there's now a gap. Now, Welbeck's got this sorted in as much as he knows the pass is coming and will zip in front of his man in order to get it, turn it around the corner. Pedro isn't quite there yet. And that's just, I know it sounds nitpicking, but it's actually a very, very important point. Part of the build-up, because if you lose it, then you put yourself back under pressure again. But when he's on the ball and he's turned around and he's gone, then for the best part, he's unstoppable. And all right, that's pre-season. Let's see how it goes in the Premier League. But yeah, the excitement levels have just gone up a notch, haven't they?
Yeah, I think time will tell with that bit as well, because don't forget that we're playing with a double pivot last year. And if both those players aren't there, it was a pre-season friendly, so you can't really say too much about it, but
see the other players sort of encouraging him, saying, come on, Zhao, this is where it's almost like still learning their aspect of it.
Looking at our midfield against Real the other day on Sunday, they aren't McAllister and Caicedo, they definitely weren't, although it's a work in progress. But anyway, let's talk about Mahmoud Dahoud. Arrived on a free from Dortmund, Andy. What do you make of him?
Again, another player I'm very impressed with. I thought in the American games, I thought he was excellent. I thought he was really good. I thought he looked a little bit lightweight against Rayo Vallecano. I thought he got pushed off the ball and actually literally pushed off his feet to, quite easily. So he might need to get a little bit stronger and get used to that sort of more physical style of football. But in terms of like his vision and passing, I think he's just that sort of steadying quarterback type player that we're looking for. And again, like you say, I think it's early days for anybody coming into this deserving team. It will take, you don't just instantly just add water and you figure this out. It'll take a few games, but again, he looks very good. Good technical player. Good range of passing. It's just what you want. And this team is about keeping the ball moving, about dizzying the opposition. And I think he's going to be quite a good part of that.
Do you see him as a starter?
At the moment, I think yes. But I think it's up for grabs. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we've got so many options now. This is one of the reasons I'm so excited about this season, is that the depth is incredible, apart from like maybe one or two positions I'm sure we'll discuss further down the line. But in terms of from the halfway line up, we are stacked absolutely everywhere. That midfield is stacked. Our forward options are stacked. It's just, you can mix and match any combination. There's going to be some really good players not getting picked to start every week. Our bench is going to be blooming awesome.
You realise...
Funny you should say that though, Andy, because like Igor Julio, he's stacked.
He's literally stacked.
Sorry, Al, you were saying.
I'm just realising that actually there could be a combination, depends on the game in question, of our central midfield pairing having a combined age of 72. If you had Lallana and Milner together.
Could happen.
And given we associate our team with being basically kids, we're talking about this is Dad's army now.
Okay, well, let's talk about James Milner then, Marcus. Arrived on a free from Liverpool. As Al's just correctly pointed out, not the youngest player we've ever signed. What are your thoughts?
Thoughts are a very good signing. I think he, as Liverpool have always, himself, he's always kept himself fit, very rarely injured. I know sometimes he features in and out, but, that he will, I hate to use the term do a job and, utility player means, but he is genuinely a utility player. I dare say he'll probably end up in goal if we're, got goalkeeper in.
Doug will push him out of the way.
He can quite literally play anywhere. And that, I think, is what has attracted him to Roberto Di Zerbi. And again, I know I alluded to it earlier about the fullback positions, but that's one place where, we may have a problem later on down the line if we don't strengthen in certain areas. So, to have someone like James Milner come in, who's been there, done it, worn a T-shirt, not as injury prone as Lallana, I think it's a great signing. Personally,
I think Milner coming in, and if he's going to be as versatile as he can be and play at left back and do this and do that job here and there, for me, that has the possibility of freeing up Pascal Gross from that same responsibility. Because as a talent, he's wasted at right back. Stick him in the middle where he should be. And if Milner can therefore fill in to what Gross was doing, then it's Gross too. It makes it even more of a kind of a versatile signing.
It was very interesting, Andy, to see his developing relationship with Onciso at the weekend, particularly when Onciso went down screaming, like he does. Milner just went straight over to him, picked him up and said, none of that, mate. And quite delightful.
When someone had a go at Julio, Milner stepped in and said, you might want to think twice about getting onto my mate. Swiftly resolved the issue.
There was a good relationship between the two of them on that side as well, which could develop into something really good.
Yeah, I think it also helps that Mildred is also a Spanish speaker.
That's right, he's fluent.
So he's fluent in Spanish, which
was is he?
Yeah.
Did not know this.
And I believe it is in addition to his football skills, another factor.
Brian Owen would be delighted.
So, So yeah, it actually doesn't seem surprising to me that he has good link.
It's an obvious move now you look at it, isn't it?
but also, I really loved that hefty challenge that he put in on, I can't remember which player it was.
Oh, the recovery tackle where he came away with the ball.
Absolutely superb. I mean, to be honest, if we want someone to do the Caicedo demolisher role, we could do worse than just have Milner taking people out in the middle, disrupting.
Like a sniper.
With a pitch.
next one is Bart Verbruggen, Marcus, signed from Anderlecht for 16.3 million, I believe. And, again, very, very highly rated. Obviously, that he came before Sanchez went, so the writing was obviously on the wall there. Do you see him coming in as a starter, or is he still going to start with a number one shirt?
I think it still will start with a number one at the moment, because I think he still needs time to bed in. But it wouldn't surprise me if by the end of the season the roles had switched, because, injuries for one thing, but also suspensions and loss of form. As we know with goalkeepers, it can happen quite regularly. So I think he'll start with Steele, and now we'll see on Saturday that it will.
After Steele's moment of madness on Sunday, which he did actually twice, he got away with it the first time. Second time, obviously, ended up in the goal.
The way that we play, and I mean, you can do it all day. Do it all day in pre-season, as far as I'm concerned, because that's what pre-season's for. Get those mistakes ironed out, get yourself fit, and get yourself the real start of the season. On Saturday. However, as I say, I think it would be Steele will start, and Verbruggen will be probably towards the end of the season he might be the first choice. But it's good that Steele's got some good competition to keep him on his toes. In the past, sometimes Albion goalkeepers have been able to be complacent on the basis if there hasn't been a backup pushing them, to which obviously Steele was pushing Sanchez last season and eventually forced him out.
And Jason Steele, of all people, given his time at Sunderland and how he sort of reflects on it, would know more than anyone just sort of this Indian summer he's having in his career. Probably, he's at the height of his career right now. And this is the whole thing about goalkeepers only ever mature after they hit 30. But considering what he's been through, I think this is someone who actually would understand more than anyone about the whole notion of keeping form and therefore keeping your shirt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, Andy, you agree he's going to be still to start on Saturday?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think of anyone else.
Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. And for the 17th season, we're delighted to be brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. And Phil has given us what looks like a very familiar shirt of the week for the first one of the season. Who wants to have a go at describing this one? Andy?
Well, it looks like a tracksuit top to me. basically, a blue body, it's Adidas, a blue body with four horizontal stripes going over a V-neck at the top, and then subsequently more horizontal pinstripes going all the way down to the bottom with the classic Adidas piping along the long-sleeved sleeves. Sponsored by Casio, and interestingly, no badge. So this is Phil's either got better at Photoshop, or this is just sent to stymie all of us because I haven't got.
Can I just say it's the one football shirt I've ever seen that's had the most straight lines on it. I think they went absolutely to town on their straight lines with this.
Well, Marcus, I did say it looks very familiar.
Would you 85, is it? 85 season? 85, 86?
Yeah, it's very much similar to the Yalada shirt we had with at the time, which is, as regular listeners to the show will know, it's my favourite Albion shirt of all time. I love this shirt. It's great. But yeah, so you think 85, okay. You would be correct, but who is it?
We're certainly going to say mid-80s, but without a clue, I mean, as Andy said, one is a tracksuit top. Two, there is no badge. Well done for your photoshopping, Phil. Well done for your choice of shirt. Thanks very much. All I can, okay, Casio. Is it a Swiss company? Therefore, a Swiss team. Above and beyond that, not a clue. And I don't think you can get anything from this unless you actually know whose shirt it is. So this is not playing fair.
Well, to be honest, I've seen this shirt quite a lot because it's obviously because its similarity to the Albion shirt of the
Come
same
on,
year.
Then.
But as it's the first shirt of the week of the season, Phil has gone to town on this one. So this is pray for Packham time. So wish me luck. And this is your first shirt of the week for the season. And it is a beauty. And Phil says this is the 84-85 away shirt of Dutch Eredivisie side NAC Breda. This name is the result of an amalgamation of two teams in 1912, NOAD and Adveno, both of which are abbreviations for long-winded full names. They came up with the NA combination, NAC, and the full name, including elements of both teams' original name, is NOAD Hoogvliet Actied Doorstetten, Analgam door Vermak, Ein Nautic door Utspanning, Combatene Breda. Or if you prefer, the English translation is never give up, always persevere, pleasant for its entertainment and for and useful for its relaxation, combination Breda. Yeah, that's strange. Anyway, the side was formed in 1912 and they play their home games at the 19,000 capacity at Vela Stadion, which holds 19,000 Fringandel and Vredetters fanciers on a good day. The club has a long history of playing in the top flight of Dutch football without really winning anything, as well as a few seasons in the second tier. They did win the Dutch League Cup, though, in 1973. NAC fans refer to themselves as the Rats. NAC was the first club in the Dutch professional soccer to found a Fans Council. This council is an advisory organisation that protects NAC's culture and defend the fans' interest. There's also one position for a fan on the board of the club. Links between NAC and Brighton go back quite a long way. NAC Breda's first professional full-time manager and coach was a guy called James Moore, who took over the reins in 1927. James played for the Albion as a striker in the 22-23 season. Another notable link is the wonderful Hans Kraaij, who joined the Albion from NAC in 1983. Mike Small played 23 times for NAC in 1986 whilst on loan from Standard Liège. He signed for the Seagulls in 1990. And his only season for us was he was a top scorer with 13 league goals. More up to date, defender Jean-Paul Van Hecker began his career with a dozen or so appearances for Breda before joining the Albion in 2020. And lastly, our new number one, Bart Verbruggen, joined NAC as a youth player in 2014, graduated to the first team in 2019. He moved to Anderlecht in 2020 before his move to the Albion this summer. So thank you for that. Of course, you can see that and over 130,000 other glorious shirts over at oldfootballshirts.com, and it's well worth an hour of your time.
Can I just say that your Italian has never sounded so fluent?
You'd know, mate, you'd know.
Quick notice for all you listeners out there, especially who are listening on FIB. Radio Reverb is a community radio station. It's a major asset for the city of Brighton and Hove, and it can only ever exist financially through donations, sponsorships and grants. To that end, we are hosting, or the station itself, not the Albion Roar, we're not that good. The station is hosting a weekend-long Reverbathon on the 16th and 17th of September. One day will be at the open market, the next day will be at the Hope and Ruin. And what we're asking from you is if you can, and we appreciate this is quite tricky in a cost of living crisis, but if you can, dig into your pocket and see if you can find a few shekels in there to help contribute towards the upkeep and running for the licenses and the rent and the rates that we have to pay to keep this brilliant radio station going. We'll give you more details as to what we're doing that weekend, what the Albion Roar is going to be doing that weekend. It's the weekend we're away at Man U. So watch this space. But anyone who wants to get involved in the Reverbathon, please do. It takes place over the weekend of 16th and 17th of September. Adrian.
Yeah, and don't forget that you can actually donate to Radio Reverb anytime by hitting the donate button on the Radio Reverb website. For the first time ever, chaps, the Albion did not have a pre-season campaign that involved trips to like the likes of Worthing or Crawley. Instead, they jumped across the pond and went over to the US of A. Now, it was a trip that, if you're looking at the pictures and the videos and everything else from this trip, it just shows how far we've come as a club, really, to see, you know, all these stateside seagulls coming out and supporting the Albion. And it was just absolutely wonderful to see, Marcus, wasn't it?
Well, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think overall, though, it was nice to be invited, and I'm sure that we'll be invited again, and I'm sure this summer series is going to be a thing, and I'm glad that the growing support stateside managed to see their heroes, or our heroes as well, I should say, in the flesh. I think... I could be right in saying, though, that sort of the games like against Fulham v Aston Villa didn't quite get the juices flowing as much as they probably would have liked in some of the stadiums, a little bit half full. So there's still work to do, but it's a work in progress. It's you know, it's here to stay. It's only probably going to get bigger. And it's a great pre-season tournament, to be fair, for the players. They get to see a little bit of America and, you know, run around in different temperatures and altitudes. Yeah.
Try the hands of different sports by the looks of it.
PR goes, I think it was an absolute triumph. You say, there's a growing number of people stateside. I mean, we know that they listen to this show, and thank you very much indeed to everyone who does listen, especially those who are stateside. And this, you know, the PR for it. I mean, we're not a club that gets into, you know, the sports pages with this financial thing here, or we're not part, although we're not under the radar anymore. We're not on the gossip pages. We're not part of the football pages, apart from, you know, this one ridiculous sort of non-story so far. So I think that we have it within us to actually sort of put out as good a PR as is possible. And I think that seems to gain some traction in America. Now, whether the club goes to America again next summer is another thing. They've got to get invited. I think the word on the street seems to be that they might go to Japan, which would be an interesting thing. Yeah, as a summer series goes, one, we got to see the Albion at a stupid hour over here. Two, you know, there was plenty of Albion fans over there, both US Patriots and home people. There's expats and there's homegrown people too. In the great scheme of things, I thought it was brilliant for the Albion. They got to play some top-class games. I mean, if they'd have played MLS teams, I don't think it would have actually done them any favours. So I think all in all, certainly from looking from the outside, it seemed to have been a brilliant thing for the club.
Okay. Well, speaking of travelling, this season, obviously, is our first in Europe, and there's been a lot of excitement and a lot of talk about the European Europa League tournament, which we're in this year, and I'm all for that. But do you think that the talk of Europe has perhaps overshadowed the Premier League season, which could be, we are still kicking off against Luton on Saturday, last time I checked?
Nope. The players just won't allow it. The management won't allow it. The staff won't allow it.
Yeah. It's something for us fans to get excited about at the end of the day, having never done it before. I probably would have gone to one or two of the American games were it not for Europe, but obviously saving up the holiday and the money to be able to go on a couple of European excursions, hopefully. But again, it comes back to the Casado thing, you know, let us fans get excited about it. For, as you were saying, for the players, you know, the job starts on Saturday against Luton Town.
A fair whack of our players have already played in Europe, so they know what it takes for the build up. You know, Lallana, Stupinian, you know, Milner, Welbeck, they've already played in Europe.
And Ferguson's an international, so, he's football on the continent, so to speak.
Now, Andy. Last season, obviously, it was a very, very successful season on the pitch. But it was obviously we very rarely had more than one game a week, apart from the end of last season. This year, we're possibly going to three games a week. Do you think it's going to have its toll on our squad?
It would be naive to say it wouldn't have any impact. However, players like to play, and these games are are massive. They're big for the fans. They're big for the players as well. They're going to love the challenge. That's why they do it. You know, you don't, you know, the better you get, the more games you have to play. I do find it slightly odd when you hear people like Klopp and Guardiola sort of like moaning about how many games you've got to play. Well, you know, just lose a couple then, and then you won't get to the European Cup final, or, you know, let someone else win the Carabao Cup for a change. You know, it's like, well, you're winning. You're winning games, and that, you know, that's the way I look at it. You know, it's, we want this. It's going to be weird, knowing that we're going to have quite a few Saturdays scratched, three Saturdays.
We had that in the championship, believe me.
And, we've done that before in the League One and League Two and the championship. So, you know, we're all used to it. I bring it on. I mean, it's utterly thrilling. And even though I don't need to get my tickets, my seat booked until next Wednesday, I bought it like at 9:01. Or 10:01. As soon as the queue was open, I got my
fantastic
seat. Reserved for our three home games, which I'm just absolutely pumped for. Very excited about the possibility of going on a trip or two this year. Although actually, it's really badly timed for work. So I'm massively busy. I'm actually hoping we don't get anywhere that exotic. You know, when we just play like, you know, Ajax would be great. We just get the train and then come back.
I mean, obviously the Premier League is our meat and potatoes, and we've seen various other teams who have had this European adventure. They've seen the league form suffer as a result. I mean, is that something it's something we've got to be wary of, surely?
But this is where the acquisition of the players that we've had comes in. Now, we've talked about it earlier in the show. We're talking about a central midfield that seems to be a top heavy now. We've got a forward line that Dennis and Dav can't get into. There are enough. I mean, that's not to say that De Zerbi is going to have the luxury of changing all 11 for a Thursday to a Sunday to a Thursday. There will be some who, I mean, I think probably what he'll try and do is make it sort of players will play two games out of three, or maybe sort of two thirds of every game or something like that. So you don't have the full blown 90 minutes. I mean, he'd have thought about it. Don't forget, he's got experience of managing a side in Europe with Shakhtar Donetsk. He'll know how it works. And like I say, with the acquisition that we've got, and there's still other kids who, you know, we don't know how good these European teams are going to be. And if we've got some, FC spam fritters from Lower Silesia that we're going to be playing, you know, and we've also then playing against the Women's Institute and then Nottinghamshire Cricket Club, then, you know, you can afford to put out the kids. So it's, we don't know how good it's going to be. We're not going to take it lightly. I think, you know, obviously they want to go into it as far as possible, but I think that they've learned the lesson from the end of last season, where basically in so many of the games, too many players were out on their feet. I think that the carefully managed fitness to this is going to be key, and let's face it, they know a lot more about this than we do, so we have no choice but to trust them. I think it's going to be pretty good. We might lose a little bit in the Premier League, we don't know, but and is the Euro, don't forget we've got six European games, so it's not every week. And we take it from there. I'd love it if we could go into 2024 still in Europe. Wouldn't that be just a major achievement? I think that's the target we've got to go for, certainly. But
De Zerbi has come out and said that he wants to win every competition that he's in. So, I mean, that's...
Well, Nekos, let's do it.
League
Fine,
Cup,
great.
Premier League, Europa League, FA Cup. And, you know...
Right. Anything less than a quadruple, then the man can bugger off.
I mean, is there any other thing, anything you're worried about going into this season, Marcus?
No, only from what's already been said, basically. Our league form may suffer because we are going to be playing more games, because, of course, the thing is with the Europa Conference League is that you can go into the Europa Conference, or the one that Aston Villa qualified for when they beat us, the one that West Ham won. So you can even drop out into that. So you can still continue your European journey in that competition, depending where you exit the stages of the one that we're in. Maybe league form, you know, will they sacrifice one of the cups? Probably, if we're doing well in Europe. But who knows? I mean, as you said, De Zerbi wants to win every competition. So, get your money on a quadruple, as I say. Klopp and Guardiola can take Andy's advice of losing some games, and
I think the thing that would concern most Brighton fans right here, right now, before the start of the season, is only we're entering into the unknown.
Yeah.
We know what it's like to enter the league, the FA Cup and the League Cup. We don't have to worry about the FA Cup until January. It's all about entering into the unknown. How good are we in comparison to other European clubs? We don't know. We think we've got a reasonable chance. Hey, we're a top six Premier League club, which must count for something.
I mean, one of my concerns going into this season is because of the constant churn of games this year, and with the travelling as well, particularly for the European games away, we don't know where they're going to be. They could be in Azerbaijan, by the looks of it. It's the fact that when you've got a manager that is as intense as Roberto, the players are trained within an inch of the life. They all know what jobs are going to do, and they all have a plan for each individual team. Will he have as much time on the training pitch as he would possibly like going into certain games?
Well, he's been down that road before, hasn't he? So, and I think that's the importance of the pre-season is that they are drilled in knowing what they're doing. How much training do they need, and in terms of tactics, do they need? You know, from game to game, if they just play their own game, which, let's face it, is very, very difficult to describe. I could describe Keith Moon's drumming better than I could describe that. If they just carry on doing what they're doing in the way that they're doing, I mean, all the while you've got the ball, you're expending less energy. All the while you're chasing it, then that's when you get knackered. So in that sense, certainly in the first, it depends on who we draw. And the club, the team, everyone around them will, okay, right, we've got a game on Thursday. It's in the arse end of nowhere. That means they leave half a dozen of the team that they expect to play on Sunday behind, so they don't have to travel. It's that kind of thing. We've got that kind of thing, that there will be that mentality that will prepare the best.
Yeah. Okay. Well, before we move on to our predictions, we've got, obviously, there's a few players that we probably haven't seen as much of recently as we would like to. Do you think they're going to get an opportunity to play games? Obviously, there's going to be a lot more games to play. The likes of Tarek Lamptey, who we haven't seen because of his injury problems, who, let's face it, if he's fit, he's such an exciting player. We've seen for over a year. Stephen Alzati, he's back. Back in the squad. I mean, these are players that were first choice at one point in their careers.
Yeah, I mean, those are good players, and they're not even remotely near the conversation about starting for a first team spot at this time. And it just goes to show how deep the squad is now. You'll go sort of delving in to, like, you know, certain possibly third string players that were once first choice players under a previous regime. The big unknown with Tarek is, like, you know, how's his fitness? De Zerbi was quite insistent that we weren't going to let him go in the summer. He says he's part of his plans, and I'm delighted to hear that, because that means that he's seen something that he likes. And if, you know, if Roberto likes somebody, then pretty sure I'm going to like them too. Alzati, I've always really liked as a player. I think he suffers from not being a very glamorous or thrilling player, but I think he literally does do a good job. Yeah. He's a nice sort of midfield engine.
Yeah, well, Alzati's opportunity is the fact that there's no McAllister or probably no Caicedo, and that is
I think he gets overlooked by the fan base quite a lot. I think he's very underrated. I think I think I have a higher opinion of him than
no, I agree. Marcus, do you agree?
I never had a problem with Alzati. It was a bit sad when he went away on loan. I can understand why. Obviously, people ahead of him in the pecking order, but, you know, fresh new start. And obviously, there's still Billy Gilmore as well. So,
well, there's, don't forget, it was Potter that sent Alzati away on loan. And the word on the street was that when Alzati came back to Brighton for pre-season training, and given that RDZ hadn't really seen him play in the flesh, he was very, very impressed by him. So, I'm expecting great things of Alzate, and I suspect he might be one of those players who I can't see him being at the head of the queue for the Premier League games, but he's a bit, he'd be a perfect fall for the European games.
Yeah. Mm.
Definitely. But bear in mind, he spent time on the continent on loan as well. So,
he knows what to expect.
Yeah.
Quite.
He's an international as well, Marcus.
Yeah.
Okay. And Marcus, Jakub Moda is a player we've not seen for over a year. Do you think we'll ever see him back out on the grass for us again?
I hope so, but I fear that that might be the last time we see him. Isn't he had another injury now?
And it's been a long time, hasn't it?
It's not good, I think, for this sort of, for the either the existing injury that he hasn't quite recovered from, or he's picked up a new knot. I can't remember which it is, but yeah, I do hope to see him back. But for this amount of time, as Alan's saying, it's probably not, which is a real shame because. If he hadn't got injured, Caicedo probably wouldn't have even started for us. So
true.
All these things turn around because he was just about being in the first team, then he got injured, and Caicedo popped up at Arsenal and ran the show with Nwepu, of course.
Yeah, another one we lost.
Yeah, quite. And if Moda did sort of like declare himself fit tomorrow, it's been such a long time since he played. He'd almost certainly go out on loan anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
I would think so.
Yeah, it's an exciting prospect if we can get him back, but it doesn't look particularly foreseeable right now, does it?
Which is a shame.
Plenty of stuff to look forward to this season, though. But I just want to sort of change subject slightly. The Players Award happened, obviously. I missed them anyway. I was invited there. I'm very delighted because I know there's a lot of people listening to the show that did get involved with the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund. It won the Sarah Watts Inspirational Award. Very well deserved, especially to Mike Langridge and Brett Mendoza and the Eaton family. As you know, we decided to close the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund. It closes its last day, it's 31st of January next year. But for the club to recognise, especially when they've been so supportive to us down the years, for the club to recognise the achievements of the charity, especially, like I said, of those people involved, but everyone who's played football, taken part in the quiz, run the marathon, played the golf day, even had a friendly bet with their mates, saying £10 to Renf says ... we've raised over £360,000 in that time, and it's been absolutely brilliant. Thank you to everyone, and congratulations to the charity itself on winning that award.
Right then, chaps, as is tradition, as you well know, it is time for our annual pre-season predictions. Last year, we did remarkably well, Andy.
Yeah, we did. I certainly hit my wildcard target.
So much so that we've taken that away from you and actually put it in as one of the questions.
Yeah.
Not even that one again, mate.
Yeah. Well, I've given myself a much harder wildcard this time.
So basically the long and short of it is this year, as usual, we've got our predictions for player of the season, who we think is going to be our top goal scorer. We've got the points we're going to get against the promoted sides. And we've got the number of goals we're going to score this season. And then our wild cards. So there's slightly different ones from usual. Now, obviously, where do we start? Do you want to start with your player of this season, Alan?
Go on then. Player of the season. Moises Caicedo was a bit of a tap-in last season, and there's no guarantee in saying this now that he's going to be with us I was about to say at the end of January, let alone the end of this month. So I'm going to veer away from him just because I'm not convinced he's going to be with us in May. So I will therefore say, I'm going to go the safe route and say, Lewis, get the cigars out of the back, Dunk.
Andy Bass, who is your player of the season for 23-24?
João Pedro, already.
João Pedro.
Call it.
And Marcus, do you agree?
I'm going to go for, again, I know there's been some distant noise about him, but hopefully we'll get a season out of him. I'm going to go for Mitoma.
That is a good answer. I have do I change now? I was going to go for Dunk, but because you've gone for Dunk, I'm actually going to go for number 13, Pascal Gross.
Do you know what? He was my second choice. So, you know, they're interchangeable. Duncan, Gross.
But I think it will be Gross. I mean, generally speaking, I don't know why. The Flair players don't tend to get voted for player of the season. It's usually a defender or a midfielder. I can't remember the last time a striker actually won it.
Been a while. I'd have to go back and think, but yeah, it's been a while. Well, don't forget, as we said, well, a striker, but the top scorer, as we've said many times on this show, the last time the top scorer got player of the season was Adam Virgo in 2006. So
Phil and Lou Shelley, Phil Shelley and his wife Louise from oldfootballshirts.com, they've given us their player of the season predictions and all the other predictions, of course. Phil for player of the season, he's also gone for Pedro, and Louise for player of the season has gone for Julian Ciso. Okay, Andy, who do you think is going to be our top goal scorer for this season?
I'm going for big Evan Ferguson, because quite frankly, that is his job. to score. I think he elevated himself brilliantly last season. I think he's tremendously exciting, a great finisher, but also superb football intelligence. And I think you might not get off to the quickest of starts this season, because I think Danny Welbeck's definitely going to be the preferred starter in the early games. But I think Ferguson will become more prominent as the season goes on, and it'll be banging him in for fun by next May.
So, okay, Marcus, do you agree?
You know what? I was going to say that there's probably going to be about 8 top scorers this season with the way that we play. But I suppose you've got to pick one. So I'm going to go for that guy, Danny Welbeck, this year.
Okay, interesting. Alan?
Well, given that I'm going to go for that guy. No, I'm not. well, I think the number of candidates is actually spread about equal about the number of people that we're all going to choose. So I'm going to go for Pedro just because the thing that will take him over the edge compared to the others is that he seems to be the penalty taker.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, McAllister last season, he topped the goal scoring charts because of the penalties.
We need penalties next season. We're pinging them in from all angles. Don't worry about it.
I'll tell you what, in that case, if it was the number of assists, I'd go for Jason Steele.
Okay, and a goal scorer, Phil Shelley has said Pedro, and Louise has said Evan Ferguson as well.
Okay, all right.
So good mix there. Okay, so last season we scored 96 goals, Andy, which led us to have the conversation like how many goals are we going to score this season. Obviously, we got an extra competition. Don't forget, we did go late into the FA Cup and into the League Cup last season. So, is it going to be more or is it going to be less for you?
It is going to be more.
Yikes!
And we're going to get 113 goals next season.
113 goals. So 2 more than a Nelson.
Indeed.
Yeah, yes. But I reckon we'll concede 115.
That might also be true. But we're getting 113.
Alan, okay. Do you agree? Do you think it's going to be more? Or do you think it's going to be less? Is it going to be higher? Or is it going to be lower?
I guess we have, like I say, we have 6 games extra in Europe. We have 1 game fewer. At least 1 game fewer in the League Cup, because we don't enter it until the third round. I guess that if... I guess logic dictates it's going to be more. In which case, you do have to look at 3 figures. So I'm going to be totally outrageous and say 114.
That's brinkmanship, that is. Marcus.
I'm generally a little bit more conservative, and I know we've got more games, but I'll say 99. Just on the page.
That's what I've got written down here. Now you... That's what I've got written in.
Have you got an original thought in your head here, Aidan?
Well, no, because I'm the bloody last one every time. So.
Well, be the first next time. Be the first next time. Go on.
Okay, so I'm going to go for 103.
Yeah, I think that's probably... That's
I have got 99 and 103 written down, actually. So I was like...
I think that's probably a fairer reflection. I'm just being silly, but, you know, who knows? Let's put it this way. It was about time that Andy's prediction of 50 goals a season was
yeah, I know.
50 seems so pathetic now, isn't it? I'd expect 50 by Christmas.
Yeah, I would as well.
We're going to score 49 now, aren't we? That's...
Yeah.
I think we're going to score loads of goals.
So we're going to score 99 and then Pedro's going to miss a last-minute penalty in the last game of the season.
In Dublin, yeah.
Boy.
Oh, no. Wild card time, chaps. And
AD, you've missed one.
Have I?
Points against promoted teams.
Oh, yes. Yes. Points against promoted teams. So we have seen Luton, Burnley and Sheffield United join us this season. Actually, last season, amazingly, for the first time in a very long time, the three promoted sides all stayed up. So I don't think that's going to happen this time round. But how many points are we going to secure against Luton, Burnley and Sheffield United? Well,
just for once, you go first.
Yeah.
Okay, I am going to go with 12 points, and I've got it written down. I've got 6 against Luton, 2 against Burnley, and 4 against Sheffield United.
Okay,
I've gone for 12.
Go on then, Marcus.
Well, I was going to say, you see, promoted sides are really funny, and you know, if they do the Everton thing of not letting us have the ball and just doing what they did when they
low block
us at the Amex, yeah, the low block. So I'm going to say 10. I think it would be quite low. It will be higher against the teams further up the table, I think.
Okay, Marcus, Andy,
asking Marcus.
It's been a long day.
I'm going to be more positive. I think we're going to get 14. I think we'll get, in no particular order, I think maybe we'll get 4 wins and a couple of draws. I don't think we'll go win every game. So 14 might be on slightly the high side, but I'm quite bullish on this season. So I'm taking the optimistic answer.
I'm going to go the traditional route and say that just historically, we're absolutely woeful against promoted sides. So I'm going to go for 9.
Yeah. 9. Okay. So the results are in. So, okay. So wild cards. This could go in many different ways, Andy. Now, you said you've got a special one for me. You did give me a sneak preview, but I can't remember what it was because we were in the pub. So if you can just let me know again.
Okay. We are not going to draw a game 0-0 in the league.
Ooh,
no nil nils.
I'm going to put down a tenner that we draw 0-0 against Luton. Then, in that case,
and my non-binding addendum to that, because I think no, is that every game that the opponent fails to score, we're going to win it.
Well, that would be the case. Yes, you just sort of that's kind of a tautology, isn't it?
Well, there you go. No nil nils.
Yeah.
No nil nils. We might have score draws, but we're not having no score draws.
Okay.
Alan.
Well, seeing as this got completely and utterly kiboshed last season, and I hope that history doesn't repeat itself, I will say that Adam Webster this time will be the one with the most yellow cards.
Mm.
Well, last year I went with Enoch Mwepu, and look what happened to him. So let's hope lightning doesn't strike twice in that sense. So I'm going to just shift my irie onto Adam Webster.
And Marcus, you're welcome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, trying to sort of think of, you know, out there wild cards, you know, Andy's is excellent, by the way. So I think, let's take AD. I'm going to nick one of AD's from, I think it might have been last year, that this year we're going to go one better than what AD would think. I think this year we'll win a trophy. And I'm not counting the Sussex Senior Cup.
On you?
No.
That is you've been drinking triple strength four hammer liquid optimism, haven't you?
Yeah. 80s well, World Cup win trophy / get to a final.
Oh, there you go.
Have you really?
Oh, blimey.
I did consider putting down C Jakob Moda, but I don't think it's going to happen. But I'm going to say we're going to get to a final this year.
So Marcus is actually planting one stage further optimism on you, AD.
Yeah,
I'm glad I'm sitting down to hear that.
I know it's a terrible.
What about what about the other two? What are their wild cards?
Okay, so well, Phil always his glass is always half empty on these sort of things.
No, his glass is always smashed.
So I mean, basically, Phil thinks we're going to score 52 goals this season.
Brilliant.
Points against AD.
Can I add a caveat to that to Phil just so he doesn't look a book by Christmas?
No, that's for the whole season. He's also said we're going to get 7 points against Merseyside, and his wild card is we're going to get knocked out of the FA Cup by a low league team. Louise, on the other hand, says we're going to score 60 goals, 14 points against promoted sides. And she says we're going to see the return of Bruno.
Oh, I think that's it. Hang on. Is that a wild card or just wishful thinking?
No, it's an album by Bob Willis.
What the fuck? Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis.
I'll tell you what, only 17 years we've been doing this. It's good to be back. And it's nice to know that AD's teeth are getting worse and crumblier. AD has a dog called Maisie. May I suggest you take her teeth out and put them in? You might actually get your diction better.
Or Molly's.
Yep.
Good one.
Right, well, before we go into Aggers and Johnners here, AD, I think it's time to wrap up, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Oh, dear me. God, I used to love that album by Bruce Willis. It was really good.
It was good. I enjoyed it at the time.
Yeah. He's an excellent bowler as well, apparently. But, moving swiftly on, that is all we've got time for this week. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you also to Alan Wares. Thank you to Marcus Hancock. Thank you to Andy Bass. I've been AD Packham, and this has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, of course, on our podcast, and in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Thanks for listening, and we see you all again next week. Bye. We'll be right back.